Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
Fun and stupid and great.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotaro. This is episode 234, a conversation with Sage Francis and B. Dolan, the epic beard men. Sage Francis and B. Dolan are both from Providence, are both rappers who have roots in spoken word, have toured and sporadically recorded together for years, and even share a label, the Sage-founded Strange Famous Records. But it has taken them until 2018 to release a full project as a duo, the Epic Beard Men. Sage is a beloved underground rap veteran who's been releasing albums of his smart, introspective, and emotional music consistently since 2002 and touring the universe maniacally to support them, all while running Strange Famous Records. B. Dolan is an equally talented wordsmith whose solo work is as likely to give new life to an old union hymn as it is to pay tribute to the old dirty bastard. The group has a new EP, Season 1, and an album on the way. They are currently on tour. We met up with Sage and B. Dolan at Come On Everybody in Brooklyn before their recent show to break down the songs on the new project. If you like The Cipher, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thecipher show. Every new patron helps Josh keep his beard in epic form. Also, we know some of you want shirts and other stuff, so please go to merch.thecyphershow.com and get yourself a t-shirt. We need you to help spread the word. If you want to know any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what's going on with The Cipher. And now, here's the duo who'll kick you the fuck out of their Uber, the Epic Beard Men. All right, so here with Epic Beard Men, Sage Francis B. Dolan. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
In the building. Brooklyn, what the fuck is up?
What's good?
You know we run the city. You know we own you.
I know you lived here for like 14 minutes. Yeah. A few 20 years ago.
Well, no, there was two stints. One was a month long, and I scraped by for that month, and then 6 months in 99, when I actually like did intern work at Fat Beats.
Oh, wow.
But he was here longer than I was. B was.
I think I got here at the end of 99 and was here until 2002.
So you were here for the... Oh, you said like the big...
Yeah.
The big event.
The big event.
The big event.
Is that what they're calling it?
He was forced to work after the big event.
Yeah, yeah. I was working as a doorman on Park Avenue, which like geographically is only really like a mile or so where I was on Park, on the Upper East Side.
From Ground Zero?
Yeah. And so, you know, right after it was like, get back to work, or the terrorists have won. We got to get back to work. We got to go buy some shit. And my boss was all about it. He was like, get back to work. Like, you know, subways are open. And but like that smell was in the air. Like the tenants of the building were making us keep the windows and doors open. We're trying to tell him like the smell's outside, guy. He's like, it smells in here. Open the windows. And like...
Where do you think the smell's coming from?
Yeah. Shout out to 812 Park Avenue.
Wow.
Denny.
So yeah, we own this place. We run it. We run the city. What up, New Yiddy?
Basically.
Yeah, we were talking beforehand and you were touring together even 10 years ago.
Yeah, like the first official tour where we both performed was 10 years ago. We had toured before that where he was like helping out with different things, but he was keeping his music stuff under wraps and just was getting a feel for how everything works. And then 2008, he dropped his first album, The Failure. And then we toured France.
France, right? It was like we started in France.
Yeah.
Wow. With the weirdest tour ever.
It was weird. Yeah. And then from there, I mean, we just continued to build. And I don't even know how this Epic Beard Men name happened. Like when I know I picked it because you would never do that.
Yeah.
So there was that meme of the Epic Beard Man. Are you familiar with
that?
Yeah.
What?
Stop it.
What?
Stop it.
15th, 2010, a fight broke out aboard a bus in Oakland between a 67-year-old man named Thomas A. Brusso and 50-year-old Michael Lovett. The fight was captured on video and put on YouTube, where it went viral. Brusso, because of his unexpected fighting ability and his totally epic beard, was quickly dubbed the Epic Beard Man. Brusso served as the inspiration for Danny Trejo's 2012 movie, Badass.
Okay, because I like the idea, like, our whole thing is, like, we are, I think a good spirit about us is, like, we want to beat up kids. mentally, physically, and like spiritually. So
right. That by was surprise.
Like, yeah. So it kind of was the thing we joked about. And when we recorded songs, we hardly wrote together or recorded stuff together, even though we toured all the time together. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there was no long-term plan for it. We kind of just knew, oh, eventually this is going to happen. And yeah, I guess, did we solidify this on the Copper Gone tour, or
maybe
that was the point at which you're like, okay, this is a group and it's called this. And
you released Copper Gone. I released Kill the Wolf. And at the point you released Copper Gone, I was probably like 3 years deep in making Kill the Wolf. My last official album took 5 years to make. So I was probably like, once I finished that up, we turned to this Epic Beard Man thing. Cause I think that was the timeline.
Yeah, I guess I really don't know. I know we went to, Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland, and stayed there for a month. And that's when we said, okay, we'll do this. But
and that was like the summer of 2016.
Yeah, 2016. Yeah. That was August 2016.
We're going to be at the Stand in the Square yurt for the rest of the month.
Every day except Monday.
Every fucking day.
This is our punishment.
Yeah.
For not being good enough rappers.
And we knew it wasn't a big payday, but we would be in the same apartment for a full month. And that's... this is time to do it. Let's try to figure out this Epic Beardman stuff. And it did. I mean, a lot of the ideas that eventually appear on the EP that we just dropped were started then, but it's everything's like taken a long time to take full form. And we still have a lot of songs left for the album. Like it'll be all brand new material by October.
Oh, nice. Okay. So you guys have season one, obviously the EP that just dropped.
It's the preview.
Season one, the EP.
People are like, this album's dope. I'm like, it's an EP, man.
They insist that it's an album. Like, like it's longer than most EPs because it is 8 songs. And then the extended version is 12 songs because we threw the bonuses, the old Epic Beerman stuff.
Oh, right. That's just for free.
Yeah. So I don't really consider that part of the EP. It's like the mixtape. But a lot of people never heard those older EBM tracks because they weren't on iTunes, they weren't on Spotify. A lot of people are just streaming music now, and the only way they could have accessed it is if they bought our respective mixtapes. So like they were on my Sick of Waiting mixtapes, they were on his House of Bees mixtapes.
One of them was like on vinyl or something. You did like special
record
store day shit or something.
Was there a vinyl for Too Bad?
No, oh, you no, can't no. win.
Celestial fist bump, roll with MCs who spit 70s brick punk. Enemies get jumped, penalty stiff as fuck. Stuff a flaccid penis in your pistol pump.
Sarah Coleman like pressed that up in the UK. She did like a very limited run of like super fancy art, and she's just does random things like that. She's like, hey, want to do a 45 and I'll illustrate all this. I was like, yeah, that's cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wanted to talk about the songs on it.
Cool. We haven't done that yet.
I know. Yeah.
It was Sage's idea. I can't take full credit for it.
Nice.
But yeah, I'll just start with Five Hearts, which is, you know, at least on the surface and probably deeper as well about video games. Lessons you learned from playing lots and lots of Nintendo. So the most important question first is, which one of you is the best at Zelda?
I was good at Zelda. Role-playing games were kind of my lane. That's what I was into.
I used to walk around my neighborhood and help kids beat Zelda. Like parents would invite me into their house because they couldn't get past certain levels.
Wow.
Wow.
That's so the last time I played it.
Serious competition here.
The whole Five Hearts thing up. Though, like that song concept came from during a lot of my shows, I would find myself going into this banter about how I feel so beaten down and like my heart levels are very low and I need to find the lake to like replenish all the hearts. And I would develop on that spiel. Like somehow it just kept building and building, and then it stuck in my craw. I was like, this is something I want to do something with. Take me to the lake. Fill a raw heart. I'm a no beat. So my verse is really about what I need to do to feel replenished, and it really has nothing to do about video games at all.
Fuck it, there ain't no slow rolling. Fuck it, I already told Dolan. When I'm done this mission, I'm taking up fishing. I'm going bowling. Take me to the as if I even care. I suffered a substantial.
He takes it in the whole other direction, but mine is like, I need to get out of this shit. Take me to a real lake. I'm gonna fish for the rest of my life.
Oh, you want to go to a real lake?
Yeah.
Too
yeah.
bad.
And, well, actually, the last time we talked, you had just unretired from touring.
Yeah.
So you've had your sort of metaphorical time at the lake for a while.
Not really. It has been nonstop since then. We haven't stopped touring really. And when we're not touring, we've been working on the songs and I'm running, you know, my label and the household and my cats. So it's nonstop.
You're running those cats?
I'm running those cats.
Those cats run you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and B. Dolan, obviously your verse is very video game centric.
Gone but not forgotten, I was glued to the cube with a view of the towers. Came up soon in the room with a gun and a glove, fucking with mushrooms and flowers. Heaven to hell will reverse, cycles of death and rebirth. I'm on a search, call it a quest. I can play the game but I ain't obsessed. Yeah,
his came first. So he like explained this concept to me in the Edinburgh apartment. And he, I think, even had like your whole verse and chorus maybe, and just kind of handed the first half of the song to me. So I basically just wrote a response to him and like the questions he was posing about, you know, at this point in life, how the fuck do you replenish it? How do you get back the juice? How do you, and then the obviously like the video game metaphor kind of took me there. So my verse is probably addressing both and sort of coming out with like the video game, maybe the video games were the key, like maybe that, those things that everyone said was going to rot our brain and our parents were so down on, but that effectively like raised us weird little like 80s babies. We're like teaching us like lessons. And also I have a little nephew that's like just hit the video game phase. So I'm like watching him and like remembering what those games did and were. And yeah, man, I mean, as parental figures go, they taught like problem solving. they taught like the thrill of achievement. They taught like,
I'm not here to big up video games.
I'm bigging up video games. Fucking video games are all right, man. Like I don't play. I had to. My verse also addresses the fact that at a certain point I had to stop playing them, and where I said like I had to get up off the couch.
The riddle room to make it out the house. Had to choose my next adventure. Had to get up off the couch. Won't you take me to the lake?
So like there was a point where I was like, I could, because like I said, role playing, like I was fucking like Final Fantasy, and like those games, to beat those games takes like 700 hours. Yeah. Like
I never mess with
it's
those.
It's a full time commitment.
I know I would totally.
Yeah, I would lose myself. Yeah. And I was like living in, when I moved back to Providence, I was like, I played like, I think it was Final Fantasy X, and it was dope. And I got to the end, and I was like, okay, like I can either continue to do this in life, or I can do what I say I'm about. And I like had to just stop with the video games, but reminiscing through the romantic nostalgia, like it's like, man, you know, I was just dying over and over, and like just do that same shit you fucked up last time, but do it a little bit different this time. And you know, the thrill of that finally like cracking the code kind of was the inspiration for my
right. Like Sage, you had that line at the very, very end, right, about like die a million times.
Yeah. See what happens until it happens, and then the game's over.
Yeah.
Memorizing patterns, dying a million times over just to see what happens until it happens, and then it's game over.
I also like how B like one ups me with this, his delivery chops in his verse. He's like, okay, now I'm gonna rap really good.
Well, I started thinking about video game dexterity. I started like thinking about better be ready, you know, like the frantic mashing of the buttons.
Set the high score where you don't want to try no more. Better be ready to die in the war and regenerate endlessly, expertly mashing the buttons, adjusting the method so suddenly cracking and massing it.
Oh, so that inspired like the triplet, like rapid fire thing. Yeah,
because this was probably one of the first songs we started working on. But I was like, because I wanted to do more back and forth, like. You cover lines, I cover lines, like Run DMC.
Yeah.
And like, no, I'm just going to like rap real fast. So don't even try.
Blacked out.
And you guys created a...
on the chiptune version.
8-bit style video game with a soundtrack, a chiptune style version of the song to go along with it.
Yeah, this dude Adam Schneider, who I collaborated with for the first time on Kill the Wolf, and then he did a bunch of work on the new Epic Beardman stuff, some of the unreleased stuff too. He's dope, and by trade he makes chiptune music. He's just a genius with it. So he did some additional synths for Five Hearts, and then I had
a video game I used to play as a kid that I wanted him to recreate the music for, and he fucking did it. He killed it. It was great sound.
And then we had a video game soundtrack, and it was like, man, I wonder if we could have a video game. So then spent 6 months researching how to do that.
Yeah, there was you shopped around a lot. Yeah.
yeah.
I was really out of that whole process. B kind of spearheaded the whole video game thing, and the end result was so great, man. It's like, it's so fun and stupid and great.
Yeah.
Like that is my video game history. That those Nintendo games that look like that and played exactly like that.
Yeah.
That was my whole shit.
Without outing the source material, I definitely recognize something that starts with a D.
Okay.
And then there's Shotgun Golf, which is great tune, very funny tune. Josh is smiling just thinking about it. I think he already has like 8 video concepts ready to go for it.
I want
to
hear those.
Do you do videos? All right, because this was one that we knew we wanted to do a video for, but we haven't really found how to do. Like, we're gonna. One of the ideas was to overtake private clubs and rich people's houses, like just run in and just kick shit.
Yeah, with a mob of people, with a flash mob.
Right.
People with shotguns and golf clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this idea that goes on in the song about golf clubs as the privatized versions of parks, the privatized versions of wilderness.
I seem to remember this used to be a park for picnics, goddamn petting zoos. Not electric carts for dipshits with nothing better to do. It's not enough you got all these beautiful acres for your little arrogant elitist game, but you need poor people to shame, so I clip.
Was like a jumping off point?
That was some real shit I witnessed in Denver. The homie was like driving me. I went to speak at a school, and she was driving me to my car, and she was just like driving me through this neighborhood, and she was explaining how Denver's been rapidly gentrified, and so it's a low income school in the neighborhood, but this park got what used to be just like a small public park, like a Union Square size park that you would just kind of cut through to get from one block to the next, just got turned into a golf course. And once it got turned into a golf course, kids that were walking to school started getting harassed by cops patrolling the golf course, and they were just like taking their normal route home from school. I think that made its way into your verse.
No, well, we talked if we had an audio style vision board for mine, it would be falling down with Michael Douglas on the golf course. I steal almost every one of his lines in that scene and put it in my verse.
Is that enough? You got all these beautiful acres fencing for your little game, but you gotta kill me with a golf ball? You should have children playing here. You should have families having picnics. You should have a goddamn petting zoo. Instead, you got these stupid electric carts for you old men have nothing better to do?
The other one was George Carlin, where he talks about all these beautiful Lakers for your little precious game or something he said.
Golf is an arrogant, elitist game, and it takes up entirely too much room in this country. Too much.
But it was like those, we both like were like, this is the spirit of the song, kind of. But that is definitely what my whole verse was on. And the stupid little hat. Like, now you're going to die in a stupid little hat.
Now you're going to die wearing that stupid little hat.
That's from Falling Down.
Yeah, I read about, it was an article Hunter S. Thompson published, one of the last ones he published. And it was a conversation with Bill Murray, where he had called up Bill Murray in the middle of the night to talk about Shotgun Golf and was convinced that he had invented this game that was going to like revolutionize America. And he was calling Bill Murray in the middle of the night to ask about driving ranges in Japan, which are like vertical on skyscrapers, apparently. So he was trying to, I guess he wanted to ask Bill Murray, like, how was that set up? And could we like open some Shotgun Golf franchises?
This article, which is completely real and linked in our show notes, contains this explanation that Thompson gave to Murray. Quote, I've called you for some consulting advice on how to launch it. We've actually already launched it. Last spring, the sheriff and I played a game outside in the yard here. He had my Ping Beryllium 9-iron, and I had his shotgun, and about 100 yards away, we had a linoleum green and a flag set up. He was pitching towards the green, and I was standing about 10 feet away from him with the alley sweeper, and my objective was to blow his ball off course, like a clay pigeon. It didn't work at first. The bird shot I was using was too small, but double-aught buck finally worked for sure, and it was fun. Bill eventually responds, it will bring a whole new meaning to the words driving range.
The only time I've ever shot a shotgun was at his bachelor party.
It is hilarious. Party. It's really funny when he shoots a big gun. That's why the video's got to happen.
Like, oh, that was another thing. Our verses are filled with shit that we've done or talked about or experienced that no one would ever know. But part of my verse where I say, we should have started with stationary objects.
We should have started target practice with like a stationary object, but gentrification doesn't move at the pace of plate tectonics.
Like, that was my main complaint, because at his bachelor party, because there, it's the discs. Like what is it called?
The clay pigeons.
Yeah, clay pigeons. Yeah, yeah. Like, why am I trying to shoot this thing that's flying? Like, I don't. Let me calibrate how this thing works first. That like, and it's still bugs me to this day that I didn't just say, "Can I please just shoot something that's standing still?"
We have actually a pro golfer who's down with us and a fan.
What up, Beef?
And he really wants he wants to make a video for this. The missing piece. There's a couple missing pieces. That we need a golf course and we need an expert marksman. Because if we had an expert marksman and a PGA golfer, me and Sage could compete against them. I must have swung a golf club, but I don't ever remember playing golf in my life.
Yeah, I don't see any professional golfer being in a video.
The golfer's down. We just need a marksman. Song. No, I played it for him. He loves it, man.
Really?
Yeah, he's with it.
All right.
That's good.
Well, we're halfway there.
He's a cool ass golfer.
Yeah, but we disparage the sport pretty hardcore.
But he gets it. I had a conversation with him. He's a working class dude, and he was asking me, he's like, you ever play golf? I was like, no, man, golf's kind of a rich people sport where I come around. He's like, yeah, me too. But I just got some clubs and started playing. And now, like, it's part of, like, he's on a mission to show working class people that golf is cool.
Wow. I'm
like, all right. I mean, that was one of the complaints of the people that where the park had been set up. It's like, man, give these kids some free golf lessons if you want to take over their park.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a game, you know. And we got guns.
shout out to Cease Lauder on the beat.
Yeah.
Now I'm a lone wolf, one chain with crooked fangs. Here I come. And I didn't come to put...
Cecil Otter is a member of the Minneapolis-based collective Doomtree. You can hear our talk with another Doomtree member, POS, on episode 192.
Yeah. Cecil Otter and Le Parasite did the Five Hearts beat, but yeah. he's from France, Le Parasite.
Le Parasite has also produced for Vast Air, Wax Omega, Astral Works, and tons more.
But Cecil Otter, that beat had been hanging around for a while, and it was just such a, like, an aggressive, I don't know, punch you in the face type beat. And I had it, I was considering using it on the Copper Gone album, but it just, I wasn't able to really body it the way that you did. Like, B went in on it first and I followed suit on that one.
Yeah. So do you guys write collaboratively together in a room, or you'll do your part and then how does it overlap into his and so forth?
I guess most of the writing was probably done in those fringe apartments. So the setup there was cool because it was like they were apartments. So the living room would just be the common space. And then each of our bedrooms would be like where we'd go and monk out and then come back to the living room and show the other what we just did. And if he laughs, it's funny. If he doesn't laugh, I go back in the room and write some more. And like, but yeah, so that was that. I mean, we've also written, by and large, I think we write separately, but we are developing the superpower now.
Yeah, we're slowly making sense of how to do that. Like, as solo artists all these years, it's very difficult to sit down and work at the same time on a song, on a verse. There's one song in particular we've been doing that with. It's taken over a year for us to write the song. It's not even finished written. But in my head, because I don't know how Beastie Boys did it, but I like to think for one song, one person would probably take over most of the lyric duties and other people would just say the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't know how else this could work. Like, what do? Sit in a circle and like, now this line, I talk about Twinkie tits. You know. I'm like, okay, no, you know.
good impression of circa 1987 Beastie Boys, by the way.
Everyone's a teenager. Everyone's stupid.
Yeah, how do you I want to be a fly on the wall when those songs get written.
Yeah. We could ask some people.
Because we're not excited. Like, people always like, oh, can we do a documentary? How you put together your stuff? And I'm like, sure, if you want to see me laying on my bed for fucking 10 hours. It's like, there's nothing exciting about this. It's all in my head, right. You know? It just comes out the hand. It's not going to be very visually stimulating.
Right.
What's funny is that we have that one song that we're writing that way, where it's like, literally, I write, stop, hand him the last line of my shit is the first line of his next verse. And we wrote it in like one hotel room, and even though it was a small hotel room, and I still needed to, like, I wrote most of my verses in the bathroom. Like, I just needed like a wall some between us, man. So I could fully get, yeah. Cause of your zone. Like, you need, you know, you know where your zone is, your alone zone.
Yeah. You got Two Different Worlds is next. Yeah, speaking very, of very romantic number. I guess I wanted to start, Sage, with your puns on this song. There are a lot of puns on.
I have a lot of inspiration for this song. There's a lot of source material.
Oh, wow.
The song is my baby, man. It is just like, wow. I think I had to like urge you to really get into it, because you're like, I don't know, man. I can't do this. Like, I'm not sure this is right for me. I'm like, this is going to be the best fucking song.
Before the thematic stuff, or I guess this is tied into it, but with the wordplay and the sort of the thematic wordplay like this, is it tough to make sure that both meanings of something like engagement come through clearly?
Miss me with a blah blah. When I'm gone, miss me then. These are the rules of engagement that I propose you share with your pissy friends. Or you can watch.
It's not important. It is important to me. Oh, well, not that it comes through clear, because I don't think it comes through clearly to most people. They'll maybe hear it one way and that's it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the people who on multiple listens and, you know, you catch them in the right mood, in the right environment, and then they start thinking about it like, oh, okay, that, yeah, I got a deeper appreciation for this now. Like, I do love that stuff, but I never expect it. So it's not an important thing. It's just, as a writer, the challenge of doing that and for it not to insist upon people dissecting it in order to appreciate it, that's always the big trick.
Okay, so it has to work what someone...
On a base level, it has to work that way, yeah.
So tell me about the song. You said it's your baby.
You know, all these years, I've been through many long-term relationships that have fizzled out or crumbled in a quick fashion, and mostly due to all the things that I mentioned in the song, because I tour so often. I'm often away. That creates friction in the relationship. That creates mistrust. That creates people like, oh, no, don't go. You know, this is my life. So... And I could take you with. And then when you take them with you, they also hate it because it's not as fun as they like to imagine.
Right.
Right. So there's no way to win. There are certain people who work this out in their life, but I never have. Mm-hmm. And so I had a real fun time kind of having these imaginary arguments and confrontations within the Two Different Worlds song, where it's really fantasy rap. Because like, I'm saying shit in there, it's kind of like over the top. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not going to sing it now, but Two Different World. It's just like I'm kind of taunting my partner with those choruses.
Girl, we are from two different worlds.
And it's a prom theme, too. You know, like, I wanted to make it feel like this is it is romantic, you know, but it's anti-romanticized ideas of what it is to be a touring musician.
Right. Miss some weddings, sure. You're gonna see some girls at the senior prom with me on their arms singing Two Different Worlds. Fucking word up.
And I draw inspiration from Walk Hard in that song as well.
Right.
Have you seen Walk Hard? He's like, listen, I'm gonna miss some births of babies. That's where I got that line from.
Nice.
I'm gonna miss some things, okay? I'm gonna miss some birthdays and some christenings. I'm gonna miss some births, period. Okay? Just unrealistic to think I'm gonna be here for every time you have a baby.
Seriously, I'm gonna miss some births of babies. I might see some shirtless ladies. Doesn't even really hurt to say these things. I just wanna state it plainly before you try to shame me. But feeling like
one of the things that was so stark to me was the flip on Top Billing, because Top Billing is such a fun song.
Yeah.
And so then to have this very stark ending when you flip it.
Milk is chilling. This is chilling. What more can I say? Top
Sage is chillin', B is chillin', what more can I say? No children.
The other thing about this song is we have been laughing for years about the LL Cool J song Two Different Worlds.
Here's where I stand, I
gotta be a man. I don't care if we're from two different worlds, but we're from
That's why we didn't want to call it Two Different Worlds.
Yeah, like no one has caught that yet. I like the idea because I like the idea of someone one day like trying to Google our song and then just being like, what the fuck is it? Like,
yeah, because LL had those real corny ballad type raps on his like otherwise classic Walk the Panther.
Yeah, rap, yeah, right.
You know,
right.
But on tours and stuff, like one of us will often like throw that on just like that's a good ironic LL Cool J 5 minute
and listen. A fun chorus. That's I guess that's what inspired the singing chorus at the end.
Yeah,
it's not the same singing, it's not the same melody, but right. Like I wanted a ballad type delivery for the ending chorus. But yeah, I forgot that's where that all stemmed from.
Yeah, and I originally like I was hearing what he was doing on it and I was like, well, this isn't me though, like I don't I'm actually like a very domesticated husband. Yeah. Like I
but what we gel with is that neither of us have children.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That is kind of how you
yeah, I was listening to things. Like his presentation, you know, was like, check out this awesome offer, ladies. And it's like I'm gonna miss some weddings. I'm gonna, you know, like, and like I'm, you know, and so approaching it from that, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm about as good a father prospect, you know, and luckily my wife doesn't want kids. And for us, it's like, if you're married and don't have kids, then it's like the constant, like, when are you going to have some kids? Yeah, you're going to have kids, though. Like, yeah, but you're going to have some kids. When's these kids coming? Like,
I actually get that, too, and it's weird. It's like, have you seen my life trajectory, really? they insist on it. It's like, you got to have kids, gotta man. You got to have kids.
Got to get them.
And so that's why.
Get you some kids, man. Change your life. And I'm like, it seems cool. Life. It's like, and I compare it. I say, I don't doubt
it's life changing and that like everyone says that. And I don't think that literally 100% of the people in the world are lying.
Yeah, no, I compare it to psychedelics in my verse. I say, I think they're selling psychedelics, but the trip seems nice.
Before we split an atom in half and raise the little aftermath. I'm trying to stop losing sunglasses and taxi cabs. Happy dads tell me I should get on the bike. I think they're selling psychedelics, but the trip seems nice. I'm sorry, though.
Those are the two things people push on you that aggressively that they're into. Psychedelic drugs and parenting. In both cases, you know, I'm like, I don't get mad anymore when it happens because I'm like, oh, you really like parenting. Like, that's dope. You should because you have some kids.
Right.
But I
hope you like.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a good parent. I don't like who I am. It's not that I even like kids. I just don't like me, the parental figure.
Right.
I'm not opposed to kids. Like when we're finally done all this touring.
You do have one of the great songs though in history about how kids are annoying.
Yeah. Disasters.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
On plane rides, on train rides, on bus rides. You need to shut your kids the fuck up.
Word up.
I'm trying to get some writing done on this motherfucker.
I hate it.
But eventually, like, I could see myself doing that if I ever just stopped touring. If I do have a kid, I'm most likely going to dedicate almost all of my time to that kid. So
right.
You can kiss the career goodbye. I mean, I might dabble here and there, but everything I know about my career up to this point is that I need to fully dedicate myself to all aspects of this music career.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, shout out to Swab on that beat. He hooked it up. He's a DJ from, I think, Denmark. And he did the scratches on it. He did a lot of cool stuff for us.
I was trying to rap like Scarface on that beat. I heard that beat.
The slow plodding beat is definitely like out of our comfort zone. It's not really, I don't know. I don't really have many songs like
that.
It's
a slow BPM. I messed with some slow BPMs, but that one's slow. I think it's slow.
It was probably one of the slowest ones we do live that I've ever done live. Makeshift Patriot is kind of a slow plodding one.
Makeshift Patriot, the flag shop is out of stock. I hang myself at half mast.
How does my hair look?
Right, but that has sort of theatrical presentation to it. That yeah.
This does too. This is getting real emotional. We had one night of tour so far, and you were slow dancing with somebody on stage.
Yeah.
Last night.
Oh, nice.
People had lighters up. It was pretty. Two Different Worlds is a beautiful scene.
Two Different Worlds is going to bring a lot of people together.
Yeah, just not us.
Expecting a lot of engagements on stage.
So my day job involves getting a lot of unsolicited listen to my music requests and press releases for all sorts of things from people. So I really felt not your Uber. So can you tell me about was there any one particular event that sparked it, the straw that broke the camel's back?
There was for me.
Well, yeah, you tell yours, because mine is a conglomerate.
Yeah, that one's almost like a mashup of two different ideas that just happened on that cardboard when we put it, when we wrote everything out.
But tell how the even the title came about.
It was, we were in Minneapolis. We had just played First Avenue. We were going to get some dinner with Brother Ali and his wife. And she was in the car driving us around the corner. And I witnessed her like yell at, or I witnessed several people try to like hail her. And her be like, I'm not your Uber. Like, this happens to me. Like, if you're just driving, like, in a hijab, like, people think I'm their Uber, like, in a nice car. And I was like, oh, wow, that's the thing that happens now. And then, like, a couple months later, I was in a rental car, which was nice, and in front of a Whole Foods going to get some food after soundcheck. And a dude just like opened my back seat and slid in. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing, man? He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like holding it so long. Get the fuck out of my car. And I was just telling Brandon, I was like, this is some new shit that's just going to happen now. People are going to think you are their taxi. Yeah. Like,
I've definitely seen cars in my neighborhood with signs that say, this is not an Uber. Yeah. You gotta open the door, like, yeah, on the window. And
as fate would have it, I ended up doing the same thing. I went into someone's car after we landed in some city.
Boston.
It was Boston. Yeah. This dude let me in and he popped his trunk.
He popped his trunk.
I was like, yo, pop your trunk. He was like, all right. And then I got in the back seat. He's like, what are you doing?
There's all this shit in his trunk too. Yeah, he had all like building supplies and we couldn't put our luggage anywhere. We were looking at each other like, oh, this is not going to be a good rating. Like, and then the dude comes out of his car like, please, please, no, no. Yeah.
But the whole demo thing.
Let me slip this here disc through the slit in your window while you stay parked on my big toe. You'll get home.
No.
Just let me spit this slow. Very Harry, Dick, and Tom with the demo and a bomb.
Listen to my demolition.
There's a long history in hip hop of rappers talking about that. It's a standard. Like, that's lost. You don't really hear about that anymore. That's kind of what drove me to want to do a song like that. Because I run a record label, so I also get a lot of, you know, solicitations. And as a rapper who's been around since, you know, like on stage since 96 and all the cyphers and all, you know, the true demo phase where everyone was holding their CDs and on tours, we would have demo day. Like if we had long drives, we would like stockpile all the demos, put them in the CD player. And then we'd all have to rate the demo and like criticize it, or not criticize, but, you know, give a critique.
Yeah.
And then most of them just got thrown out the window because we weren't very eco-conscious at the time. But that, I just loved the idea of having this guy who had all the industry phrases, all the hot, you know, buzzwords.
Yeah.
Like highly anticipated, long-awaited, game changer, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Hey stranger, this here's the banger. This is the long-awaited, highly anticipated game changer.
Peace. And I've had so many interactions with people like that that it just was like it flew out of my pen, and it was like doing that interaction where I was like, I don't know how we can do this live because I do both voices on my verse.
Right.
But then I was like, you know what? Oh, I'll be the whack rapper.
And then
you just like sun me.
And you have your part where you sort of imagine what the person giving you the demo ultimately wants, which is you to stop your entire career.
This is it,
man. Stop everything you're doing and sort of give your entire efforts to them.
I had to book him a show. I had to put him on the track. He should be out on the road. In fact, I put my shit on hold because this was ready to go. You telling me you really did so? Homie, shit, no.
Yeah. And it's observing what Sage does from a distance with Strange Famous and like the way he has really put on a lot of independent artists, myself included, is always ill to me. And I offer much less of a resource to people, but still everyone encounters those characters at a certain point. And sometimes those characters are very talented people. And that's why, like, I'm not trying to be totally down. You know, I wish you luck. I hope you get what you ride. Like, I hope it works out. But, like, I literally have nothing to give you, man. Like, but people come at you with this expectation and this very, like, egocentric presentation of themselves that, yeah, just gets it wrong. And so, yeah, the concept was like, you know, or the verse was an attempt to just be like, I'm not the one. I'm not the one you're looking for.
This is the first beat I've ever that I did that I rap on that actually was ever released. So this was the very first time.
Wow. Sage Francis's first production credit.
Yep.
Official. Wow.
Got a lot more sitting on deck. But
yeah, wow. Bang. You chopped that up.
Yeah, that was that. I literally, well, I can't claim ownership of that. I literally just sampled, like, if Vanilla Ice, like, I just sampled Bowie.
That was a replay.
I mean, well, it's funny because
this whole time,
it's funny because there's a famous EPMD song about demos, but from the other perspective, right? Mm. Of them trying to get someone to listen to their demo on their first album.
We had to play ourselves in the festive gear. He double had to push YMD steer. They were in our dreams, the cool with golden limos, and all we kept saying was, please listen to my demo.
Got the De La Soul, Ha Ha Hey Hey. Got Cool G Rap. Listen to my demo.
Knocking on my door saying, hey, yo, yo, I got a funky new tune with a fly banjo. I can't understand what the problem is. I find it hard enough dealing with my own biz.
You heard the boy's life, is it nice or what? He's the main entertainer inside the show. And he goes by the name of DJ Polo. So give a demo, give a demo, give a demo.
Man, there's just so many. It was really, oddly, a common theme in older hip hop.
Right.
And you don't hear it anymore. So I was like, let's do this. Let's get it old school sound. And like most people, it's such a niche interest or understanding that I can't, like most people probably have no idea what the fuck's going on in this song.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so, but yeah. They're like, yeah, fuck Uber. That's how we get you.
So we have DIY MFS. Great. Sort of the up-tempo.
Yeah, again, Swab, DJ Swab.
Yeah, we did a couple versions of that over a couple different beats before we landed on that one.
Yeah, I knew it needed to be an up-tempo beat, like, because I wanted, like, DIY, like, I needed that energy.
DIY-MFS, do it. DIY-MFS, do it. DIY-MFS, do it. Do it your motherfucking self. Yo, say you on cue?
Yeah, I'm on cue.
And again, that's tough to write to if that's not your typical, I don't know, rhythm in writing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You ended up writing your first verse, and then I went the whole different route of slow down, like a very paced out delivery, which is really not common for me at all.
I represent myself in the court of public opinion. That's a gift. Collect the rent to pay the mortgage. The landlord wants the building. Don't second.
The whole thing is fun. It's just like this whole do it your motherfucking self is like DIY is dead, y'all. Here's the new shit.
Get a load of this.
And we do.
We added motherfucker.
Again, like what I say in my verse, I fucking drove to the venue. I set up my merch at the bar. Literally just did that.
I can attest to that. Sage really was folding shirts with not very good technique.
Yeah. So there's no, I'm a jack of all trades and master of maybe three, right. You know, but, I am a master, that's for sure.
And so Fresh to Death is a track I loved. And B, I think especially you on that song talk about this idea of streetwear brands, hype beasts, whatever, kind of stealing ideas.
I see streetwear brands, they put my graphic on tees, then try to get me to rock this shit to help with publicity. You must be kidding me, a fitting, I'll go on a killing spree, rip out the stitches and seams, and shit you bit from the team. I got.
Is that something that literally happened to you?
A couple times, yeah. Many times, actually, keeps happening. The Make Racist Afraid Again thing is another example of where I just like have just seen my idea just proliferate and get ripped off. But before that, there was a streetwear brand that started like coming around and like, hey, we really, you know, just gave me a bunch of free shirts and I liked a couple of them. I started wearing them, got photographed. Tagged them, cool. You know, they're an independent brand.
Right.
Next thing I know, like they come out with like a Skullbeard shirt and they want to give me that for free. And I'm like, I sell a Skullbeard. That's my shit. Like, so that's what I'm rapping about. But also, this dude, someone sent us a picture of my face in like Vogue magazine on somebody's sweater walking down a catwalk at Paris Fashion Week. And it was a Belgian designer whose name I always fuck up is like Walter von Buren Dork, whatever the fuck.
Right.
And he had just like taken an image of me that I was using for promo and turned it into a garment in his collection.
It's actually Walter van Barendonk, who has a pretty epic beard himself. We'll have a link to the sweater in question in the show notes for this episode.
Did you ever reach out or anything?
I did. I hit him up and no one got back. Being a copyright criminal myself, I don't even want to put the karma into the world of like what am I going to do really? you know, ideas are free. It's all, I've had to take an approach over the years of like, there's more where that came from. Yeah, like have that. That's last season.
It was just bizarre. Yeah. Just the most bizarre thing to see of this yarn version of his face and beard.
Well, I had these little Paris promo specialty cards that were like, I would give them to people and I would sign them if they didn't have money to like buy a CD or something. I would sign it and it had my like Twitter, Facebook, and follow me on social media shit. And it had that picture of me with the beard extensions in a very certain coloration and like makeup on my eyes in a very certain coloration. Mm-hmm. And I had toured in Brussels like for years, multiple times, passing out those cards at every show. So they were, you know, I was intentionally spreading them through Europe. But yeah, like years later to then just see it, you know, who the hell knows? Like you might have seen it in somebody's fridge or some shit. Or
speaking of postcards, we're supposed to have postcards on the store.
Yeah, because the designers of the world need more shit to rip off.
And Sage, what were you thinking on Fresh to Death?
Well, being I'm not very fashion savvy. Yes, you're right. Like I see you looking at my clothes that I haven't taken these pants off in about 4 years. I only wear Strange Famous gear. I guess I went in on that a bit. It's just kind of, I'm trashy.
Pockets and cheap wallets in a scene that seems a $6 and ripping off scenes just as a street knowledge. The release garbage is so hot, so don't talk trash. I speak sinus and blow spots, so how about that?
So did Dope Knife.
Yeah, yeah.
Find a way, tell me my shit is fresh, what you trying to say? Who cares? I'm in the same mood where since 98, true shit.
Like we both, there are reoccurring themes in each of our verses, oddly enough, even though we all wrote at different times about different things, but the whole trashy, like, fuck the fancy shit. I like fancy shit, though. I'm just, these shoes are pretty, the most fancy things I've owned in my life.
That's why I knew it would be fun to pull you into a song about fashion. Like we're writing about fashion on this one. Like.
Right.
Yeah, but the whole don't pop tags, I pop off at the mouth.
Don't pop tags, I pop off at the mouth. I don't pop tags, I pop off at the mouth. I don't pop tags, I pop off at the mouth. And remove your fucking shoes when you step in my house.
Like, I didn't want it to be, it's not a Macklemore thing. And no one said that. But
I wouldn't have.
Yeah,
I thought it was just.
I think popping tags predates Macklemore.
Yeah, but he popularized the phrase. I'd say.
I'm gonna pop some tags.
We're giving him.
How do you
props.
Pop a tag, B?
I don't know. Like you just like.
I'm trying to get one out of my armpit.
Not a skin tag. He pops skin tags, rips them off with fucking toenail clippers. It's horrible.
I tried that. Didn't work.
Space Ghettos is the most, I don't even know if it's the right word, abstract, poetic, something song on the record. It has like a different approach.
Yeah.
That's graffiti. No, that's a painting. Now that's an ecological phenomenon. The ball is whirling. Natural laws are breaking. Nah, that's a B-girl. Bullshit. That's the oldest space ghetto in the world.
I wanted to include that for a few reasons. One, it was the first up-tempo song we did stuff to, and because we knew we didn't just want to have everything in the same tempo range. And it's got the spoken word elements, which obviously we both have a spoken word past, and I wanted to include that in a song.
Right.
I wanted to include Reanimator as a producer. I've worked with him for so long, and I love his work.
I'm a soapbox, yelling into megaphones, killing hard rocks, using carcasses as stepping stones.
The producer Reanimator has worked with Sage for over 15 years, since his 2002 album, Personal Journals.
My pedestal was too tall to climb off. In fact, that's the reason for the high horse.
And I wanted something weird. Like, I wanted something that just was, took a lot of, I don't know, spacey rap is also something that I lived through, you know?
Right.
So right. I just kind of, the whole Epic Beardman thing, I like to draw from eras of hip hop that kind of went away and don't get much, love anymore. But it all started with a fucking joke in Scotland where the guy said, say space. Now you say it.
Space.
Say ghettos.
Ghettos.
Now say space ghettos.
Space ghettos.
He said space ghettos.
Space ghettos.
Like, yo, you don't know space ghettos? Look. And he showed me a picture of the Spice Girls. And that's how they say space. That's how they say Spice Girls. Space ghettos.
Or the joke is that,
No, if we say space ghettos, it sounds exactly like how they say Spice Girls.
Right.
So that's how, like,
and this is like a well-known joke because, wow, like, since the song came out, everyone from Scotland is like, ah, it's Mace Ghetto.
They love it. They love it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So even if no one else gets it, that's
Scotland. Song. In Aberdeen, you shout it out, Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's this one part that, if I'm reading it right, it's sort of about this idea of people in viral videos sort of laughing at what's around them, kind of vibe. I'm going viral because of a side note. Like everything's an inside joke for the white folks. Some of us are laughing, but not to the banks at your so-called social experiment. Another cheap prank. You could be a part. What were you guys' takes on how Jake Paul's career got ruined for doing exactly that? Jake Paul is coming through. Yep. Jake Paul is on the crew. What?
Jake Paul is with the views. Yeah. Who the fuck are you? I don't know. Jake Paul is Jake Paul was a popular YouTube quote-unquote star who did some pretty offensive stuff not worth bringing attention to.
I don't think his career got ruined. I think he got bolstered.
Come back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I don't think he was treated the right way by any media outlet or Twitter or YouTube. They just continued to give him more shine. And yeah, I mean, I'm not invested in any of that shit, but now I'm aware of him. Congrats.
Right. That seemed to be kind of the quintessence of what you're talking about, though, like where he's literally going to Japan and laughing at everything.
Right.
And
for that part of the song. Yeah. There's been this over the years, mostly it was YouTube. Some was on Vine, but people were just doing shitty things to random people and thinking like that in itself is a prank.
Running up and pulling food out of their hand or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of it banked on, the ones that really irk me are the white privilege pranks where it's like you wouldn't do this and get away with it if you weren't white,
right?
Or in, like, I don't know, it's tough to totally break down because I'd have to show certain specific things that I'm talking about.
Should be a TED talk. You should turn this into a TED talk.
But that's just one passing line in the song. But that is what it was all about. It's just like everything's a cheap prank. You're just you're trying to go viral by being cheap. So many people, it's not just that, it's like that can apply to so many things. So many rappers that I've worked with or that we know that, like, ooh, you really gonna do that just to go viral? That's sad. It's like I used to think of that about like a Sprite commercial, like, ooh, KRS doing a Sprite commercial. KRS one comes with strike two when Shan is through. Second strike, Shan sees triple sprites within his eyesight. At strike three, lyrical verse dispersed to obey your third. But I'd rather, like, these other cats do Sprite commercials than do what they're doing.
Right. And so, B, where were you coming from on that song?
Man, I was rapping what he wrote. That's the different approach, is that, like, that's Francis. Like, that's, like, straight up, like, he sectioned off the lines. That, I feel like, was that one of the first?
Yeah, well, it's the very first song we completed.
We thought we might do joints like that.
Yeah. And then,
and then we didn't.
Yeah. I wonder why. This guy didn't want to do any more of those.
Nah. But, nah.
I did. I like the, like, quick back and forth stuff. Try harder for Mr. Walker to try Becca. Then turn in with, you gotta pray to your mind, Mecca. Never waste energy, I'm a valuable time collector. My agenda was set off in 9-decker when the die was cast. Brass, the cast. Director, write a letter of recommendation. That's why I said early on, I was like, how do they do that? Like, I was like, I'll write the whole thing. You write a whole thing all on you do a whole song, and then you just tell me what lines to do. That way it's easy. I know how the back and forth shit. So that. Right. That was the first song we completed on out of everything. Like, it was the first one mixed. It was,
that's it.
Yeah. So
that was, I guess
it was. And what was it like kind of just being a vocalist and not a composer?
It was weird because we sit in different pockets or something. But it, I mean, it was like we basically just like knocked it out in his studio. But, you know, having to figure out like take his lines and like.
There's inflections that, there was inflections on
it's hard to even
that were difficult for him to like match to what I was doing.
Or the way words are accented,
yeah,
like the way he accents words are like,
that's called inflections.
Subtle
Jesus, learn words.
Subtle differences.
And finally, dumbass kids. So
that's mine. Yeah, that's my shit.
That's your shit.
That's
the beat. What was there? Beast. Was there anything in the original MOP line that inspired it?
Yeah. I won't sit back and rap like these dumbass kids. I've been around, I'll put it down. I ain't these young ass kids. MOP. I've loved that line for years.
Yeah.
I actually, that line single-handedly like made the whole song, really, because I had loved that line for years. I had always thought it would be a dope chorus, but it's a very hard sample to isolate.
Right. Yeah. There's not acapellas for that record, as far as
there,
I know.
There is.
There is acapellas.
A very, very, very hard to find acapella that was released on like a white label DJ only copy that Plain Old Bill from Minneapolis hunted down over years. I had just, we toured together. I told him about this idea and he just digs like nobody I've ever seen through like stacks and stacks of old hip hop. Like that's sort of his lane.
Plain Old Bill is a Minneapolis area DJ who has toured and recorded with our episode 192 guest POS, as well as Brother Ali and others. He is also the co-founder of Get Crifey, one of Minneapolis's top hip-hop nights at the Fame Club, First Avenue.
And he was like, no, I know there's like a In the Cuts Volume 4 had on the bed. Like there was a, I don't even know if actually there was an acapella or maybe there was just an instrumental and he took the instrumental and did like the phase effect to get an acapella.
Wow.
But
that's dedication.
Yeah, it was that was the longest part of that song was the couple years Bill spent hunting that down. Like since, and so he hit me with the sample and then like on a plane, once I had the sample created the whole rhythm of the drums and then yeah, just played synths for the rest of it. DES3K helped me like engineer a lot of that and beef up a lot of what I had done, but
it's just such a hard beat. It's like, yeah. It's so, like I wanted my verse to like, I got all those crowd vocals, like a scenario, you know, the scenario song, like how it's the crowd punches in a lot of lines. I don't think we totally achieved that in my verse, but that was the intent.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all.
Who got the vibe? It's the tribe, y'all.
Tribe, y'all.
We're live, y'all.
Live, y'all.
We're not all made to cut. If I may be so curt, if I'm allowed to be frank, no one understood my words till I was breaking the bank.
I was like, God, that song, the beat just makes me want to fucking put on a pair of Tims, you know, and swing some fire around.
Arpeggiators. That's my shit.
It's also got that old kind of the old RZA synthy.
Yeah. That
very high in the mix and is like obnoxious, but cool.
Yeah. And so lyrically, what were you thinking, B?
I kind of writing that one took me a minute because I had to really figure out like how I feel about my age, rap, young people in rap, you know, and where I'm at like at this moment. And I didn't want to just shit on kids. And I didn't, even though the hook is clearly like, I'm not these dumb motherfuckers. Like,
right.
I think there's something to that. Like, I do think there's an aspect to which like kids really don't know shit. And America like worships youth in a way that is counterproductive and like almost lowest common denominator type shit. Instead of expecting kids to like raise themselves up to a bar of quality, it's more like, whatever they're doing, that's it. Like we should just all be like that automatically, which I think can be bad. But at the same time, there is something about youth that is in its like innocence can just conceive of really ambitious, crazy shit and should be followed. Like these kids with the NRA and what they're doing and shit. Like, you know, sometimes we should follow the fucking kids. And I look back at, or the fact that I'm like a 37-year-old rapper doing what my 12-year-old self decided it would be a good idea to do. Like literally I'm living in the fucking conception of a 12-year-old. Which is fucked up in a couple of, but at the same time, it's like, damn, like I look at other people around me who let go of that or didn't have that or weren't that kind of weird fucking kid and they're all looking at me like, man, you did it, you sprung out of the fucking trap. And I'm like, well shit, if I did, like I owe it to a 12-year-old. Like a 12-year-old figured it out. So yeah, so I'm kind of walking the line between like, kids, you don't know everything, you're gonna be old, being young is not gonna last. Like if being young is all you are, that's not gonna last. But at the same time, you know, do you like to, you know, you don't take your own advice type shit.
My advice to young writers is quit, stay in school. But if that ain't you, then nothing I can say or do will change the truth. Take your own advice, ignore the hype, and don't be chasing you.
Sage, what was your spin on, since the overarching concept was his, what did you do with it?
Well, it encapsulated what the spirit is behind our name too, how it all came about. Like I like the idea of like having if these kids are upset by a song like this, come at us, you know, like let's fucking go at it. Let's I'll let's battle. It's not that this, they really battle, but you know, like, that's what I'm
Write
on.
Me a
like,
scripted slam poem.
Like, yeah, am I bullying you? Oh, too bad, motherfucker. Like, this is hip hop. Can we fucking like go at us? That's fine, man.
Yeah,
that's sort of what I'm on. Well, honestly, my verse was talking about how when I was young and like what I had to do to get by and overcome what people probably thought about me that was stupid, you know? So it can be used as inspiration for all these dumb motherfuckers out there popping Zans and, you know, ruining their fucking future for the sake of a Instagram post.
And just generally, is there a difference in how you approach songs, knowing this is going to be a group thing versus this is going to be a Beat Dolan song, a Sage Francis?
I think it forced me to like compress all my ideas in a tighter space, which has been good. Like, I've dug that about it. Like on Five Hearts, where it was just like, I've only got 16 bars. That's all the space I can take up in this song. So I have to put what used to fit in 3 minutes into, you know, one minute and 30 seconds or something. So that was the first immediate thing I noticed, was like just less space and therefore a different approach.
I don't personally look at the songs like that. I'm not trying to squeeze in a full Sage Francis song into my verse. I'm trying to do my best to share the space and infiltrate your space at the same time. And all the songs now that I conceive of, I'm always thinking of how can it be an Epic Beardman thing. And I don't think every Epic Beardman song has to be shared between the two of us. That's why, like, I think it's a, like, yeah, I wrote all of Space Ghettos, and I think he should feel comfortable writing a full song. And even if he wants to perform the full song, it's still like, I'm in my whole mental frame now is Epic Beardman and how we're going to always be able to present this to people and perform it. And
to that end, if like something can be done by only one of you and be an Epic Beardman song, what is an Epic Beardman song?
Our support of each other's idea. There's only something we won't do together. Like, there's real personal songs that we don't do. Mm-hmm. Cause I call it balls touching. Like, like, I've been known as making real vulnerable songs.
Of course. Yeah. From the very beginning.
Right. And I opened that lane up to a lot of rappers who are now making very like cheap, sad songs. And they will send me like this real, like cheaply personal, shit and be like, yo, you want to get on this track? It's like, I don't even know you. I don't want to be on a track where you're talking about like this issue right now. Like, that means our balls would be touching and we're not cool like that. Even though B and I are cool like that, we should be able to feel comfortable. But I don't know. I feel like EBM is more of a, it's more fucking rugged, you know. Like, I like having, it's more fun. Like, that is what I wanted Epic Beardman to be. Yeah. Funky, fun, punchy. And that's, I know personally in my solo music, it's not that, you know. So I love, like, now I guess I'm separating it in my mind about, oh, this kind of concept would work great with Epic Beardman, not so much as a Sage Francis song.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, like,
and for your sake, because B gets very political in his, like, overtly political in his solo music.
Using union songs, for example.
Heck yeah, on occasion.
The clock is still ticking for the victim of the future. You wait until they look like you to ever choose, but.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Damn.
And I don't think that is our fit for Epic Beardman. I think it's a good excuse to kind of step away from that. Not entirely, but like that's a Beat Dolan thing, you know. That's
yeah. I think in general, like, figuring out like what we've spent the time doing other than making the songs, or in the process of making the songs, has been like figuring out how to, because we both just been doing what we do separately, how to bring it together. And some of the stuff that we do separately maybe hasn't worked its way in yet. But then like we'll make a song. There's a song called Hedges that's not out yet. It'll be on the LP where it's
I've read about it.
Yeah. It's not fun. It's not necessarily funky. But it's a, you know, it's another thing I used to do by myself that we executed together, and it's even better than I would be able to do it by myself.
The track, described in detail in a 2017 article in Clash, which we'll link in the show notes, is about next-door neighbors who come from opposite worlds politically. Sage and B are currently performing it on tour.
So it's sort of, I think it tends, the process probably lends itself to funnier, more lighthearted stuff, because we're really friends and we're really, we have a funny rapport between each other. And so the natural inclination is to try and make you laugh with my lyrics. And like, so it's, you know, as opposed to making you weep. You know, like, yeah. But yeah, it's not to say this couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it can. I like that we're establishing it as a fun outfit that even if people don't like Sage Francis, maybe they'll actually like Epic Beard Man. The same thing was happening with the nonprofit stuff. Because I like that, to me, that was where I would dedicate fun material to, a real zany, off-the-wall shit.
Wasting away at your job. That ain't right. On your front and on my squad. That ain't right.
Nonprofits was the name of the duo of Sage and producer Joey Beats. They released the album Hope in 2003.
I was going to say, I feel I heard some similarities, not in necessary, you know, some similarities in tone between that project and this one.
Yeah, it might be just the younger sounding Sage. I was young. I'm younger now than I was then.
I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Which reminds me actually of something before we got, I actually wanted to ask you about one of your songs, B, which is the Who Killed Russell Jones.
Yeah.
Which to Sage's oblique Dylan reference there.
Yeah.
Is kind of a mashup of, or a spin on Who Killed Davey Moore, right? The Dylan song. But about ODB.
It's too bad he had to go, but there was pressure on me too. You know, it wasn't me that made him fall. You can't blame me at all. Who killed Davey Moore? Why and what's the reason for? Not us, said the angry crowd.
But the blame ain't ours, he couldn't cope with the fame. We got family of our own, we can't afford to fail. Didn't have time to go and visit in jail. So when he looked us in the eye and said, I'm dying, we didn't pay attention to give it any mind. And now looking back, maybe we should have called, but you can't blame us at all. So who killed Russell Jones? Why and was the reason? Not us, said the managers and record execs, who treated each arrest like nothing but free press.
And so I guess the first question is, where did that idea come from to take Dylan's story of a boxer where everyone's, you know, denying responsibility for his death?
I had heard Who Killed Davey Moore like many, many years ago. And I wrote Who Killed Russell Jones quite a while ago too. And I'm not sure of the exact moment where I kind of realized it, or I was just a huge fan of Old Dirty Bastard. To me, like, he's one of the most unique like spirits that was ever in rap, like performance styles, lyricists, just weird. And I say spirits, like, not even from a particularly spiritual place. I mean, just like that dude's energy and presence have just never been replicated for me again. Like when he would come into a cypher, no, he could be standing next to Pharoah Monch, he could be standing next to Chuck D, and you'd still like ODB would just take it into his zone and like give you a total change from everything else that was happening. And so he was just always so ill to me that I really like felt his loss when he was gone. Like, oh man, that was one of the voices I always wanted to hear. And I, you know, I have this inclination to over empathize. Yeah. I over empathize with people I don't know. So I just started thinking about the humanity of that person and the fact that like we lost that real person and there's people he was close to, all that. And who's to blame? As I looked at things like the Rock the Bells documentary or like some of the stuff that's interviews or stuff that's come out about the last years of his life and what prison did to him and all that. And just thought, man, like everybody collectively failed at one point or another in some way. And maybe nobody did. It's one of those things that blame is really hard to assign. Cause how do you assign blame when a grown man just decides to do that, you know? Maybe nowhere, maybe everywhere. And which brought me probably to the Who Killed Davey Moore. And is one of those things. It was a great format to use.
Do you know if anyone close to him has heard it? Do you want anyone close
to
hear it?
Yeah. If you look at the video, some of the, in the comment sections, there's some notes from his family that are into it. And it was actually got posted on like Wu-Tang's official website at one time. And they, so which I took as like a stamp of approval. Cause it's always, when you're writing about a real person, it's always like that's the test. Like, can I depict you in reality as I see you without dishonoring you, kind of?
When you asked, like, if I do a song and he's not on it, what makes it an epic Beardman song?
Yeah.
Well, when ODB did a solo ODB song on a Wu-Tang project, what makes that a Wu-Tang song? I don't know. There's something like...
Click. Yeah. It's the beard. A beard.
Yeah, the beard.
And finally, you guys got a sound check in like 2 minutes, but you are a rap duo. Your logo is obviously inspired by another great rap duo, EPMD. What makes a great rap duo, to your mind, specifically a duo?
Tension.
And compromise. People, you can't both be personality A type or B type. There's a compromise every which way, and we're always figuring it out.
Wrong. The answer is tension.
And good sex, having a good sex life.
What's next for Epic Beardman? Obviously, you have 8 songs out or 12 in the deluxe version.
Yeah, we'll be touring pretty regularly through the whole year, but our main sights are set on October when the album will drop. And I say that with my fingers crossed, because we really need to like make sure that happens, because we're already booking shows for October as a fully packaged tour. And we're going to be bringing, it looks like Dope Knife out with us. And I don't know who else, but we, right now, all this is we're setting up and making people aware of Epic Beardman and what kind of show we put on to get them excited enough for like next time we come through, even if it's in 6 months, they're like, there's no way we're missing this show. And I'm bringing my crew with me because this shit is fucking dope. So that's really a motivation behind playing a lot of small spots first and then graduating onto the bigger things, which, you know, I don't want to count my chickens before the eggs hatch, but that is the plan.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to it. Sage Francis, B. Dolan, Epic Beardman. I'll let you guys get to soundcheck, and then we'll see you at the show.
All right. Thanks again,
guys. Thanks for having us, man.
Strange Famous, Epic Beardman. Yeah.
It's hard to believe it's been about 3.5 years since we first had Sage on the show. Talking to him is always a special treat for me, as I've been a huge fan since Personal Journals. And the fact that he and B. Dolan specifically chose The Cypher for them to break down their new project was a really special thing that meant a lot to me. I hope some of that feeling came across while listening. Talking to them, I learned a ton about the songs, and it gave a new spin to a lot of the material. I hope that everyone who listened to this checks out Season 1, which is available for free download at Strange Famous's website. Join us in 2 weeks when we talk to Destroy and Q Unique of The Arsonists. The Bushwick crew has recently reunited after years apart to release their first album since 2001. Tune in to find out why, and to hear how Ringo Starr fits into it all. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cypher as soon as it comes out, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use. Make sure you check out our archives while you're there. If you like this episode, you should listen to our first talk with Sage on episode 81. You'll find out why he and Josh are still joking about Dijon. By the way, if you use Apple Podcasts to listen, go now and give us a rating and a review. It's by far the easiest way to help us out, which is why every podcast you listen to wants you to do it. Seriously, go now and do it. And you can really help us by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you each episode takes at least 20 hours of work, and we could really use the support. If even 20% of you gave us $1 a month, I could afford my country club fees in time for shotgun season. And again, go buy a shirt, a mug, or whatever you want at merch.thecyphershow.com. You can find us at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Follow us and let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see on the show in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
It's really funny when he shoots a big gun.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
You know, I'm a jack of all trades and master of maybe three.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
It's really fantasy rap.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
I used to walk around my neighborhood and help kids beat Zelda.
Audio editing by Rob Van Vranken.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Karma Serene Graham.
I offer much less of a resource to people.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Yeah, he's like, you had a device in your hand. I was like, yeah, it was my GPS. He's like, nah, you can't do that in New York anymore. I'm like, oh, all right. Because there was a murder in the neighborhood, so...